I'm Paul Lancour with Podtech.net.
Most people don't even realize it's a problem. So when people look at taking costs out of, they're looking at infrastructure, they're looking at contract renegotiation, they're looking at virtualization. We found very few shops that take a really hard, critical look at labor and how they're managing, estimating, and tracking labor.
That's Pete McAvoy, senior manager and technologist with Bearing Point. In this broad-ranging discussion, Pete talks about IT budgeting in general and IT personnel budgeting in particular. I started by asking Pete why so many organizations don't have a good handle on such a large part of their IT budget.
Typically, we see, as people are doing budgeting, they have a pretty good handle on infrastructure budget, like actual tangible assets. What we don't see is a formal method for estimating labor. And typically, labor constitutes something like 75% of all IT spend. So people are just sort of ballparking, you know, my ongoing labor and the incremental labor need.
I'm just a little dumbfounded by that. Most organizations ballpark 75% of their IT budget?
That's correct. I mean, it's not as awful as it sounds because people have an ongoing staff. So they don't take into account forecasting the need for ongoing staff, right? That's a given. And then they estimate the incremental add. But what we say is, look, if you look at this with a formal estimation methodology, not only can your existing staff be more productive, you know, you can add staff at the proper points, you can use consultative or contract resources at the right points, and you can just manage labor a bit more intelligently.
And so how do you go about doing that? What do you recommend for organizations to do that more effectively?
We recommend implementing a formal estimation methodology. There's half a dozen commercial tools you can buy that do this. You can also get free ones from the web like Kokomo. They're all based on sort of a nonlinear labor growth, and they're all based on ongoing calibration, like however many projects you've done. These tools can get, as you input the data, estimates, and actuals, these tools get much, much more accurate.
So the tools are out there and available, readily available. What are the barriers to getting an accurate estimation of labor costs in IT? Why isn't this happening more widely? Is there a cultural barrier to doing this within most organizations?
So I think there are some cultural barriers there. The tools are not explicitly simplistic. The tools are parameter-driven. So without some proficiency in estimation, you get the parameters wrong. Your estimate can be wrong by an order of magnitude. So, you know, obviously we would recommend that you get estimation mentors or you get consultants to put an estimation program in place.
So is that the old garbage in, garbage out problem?
That's exactly it. And once people spend the time and they research the tool, they put it in, they get a bad estimate out of it, they think, you know what, this is no better than me just guessing.
So how do you calibrate these models in order to make sure you're getting good information out of them?
The best way to calibrate them is to get actual project data, like historical estimates and actuals. And there's two ways to calibrate them. One is you put in your historical estimates and actuals and you adjust the parameters of the model. So you change the actual factors in the model. The other way is a bit more mathematical, which is you change the weightings of the parameters. So given a model, you have your estimates in, you believe you put in all the parameters properly. You estimated the risk right. You estimated the size right. Everything was right. The estimate's way off. You need to change the actual weightings of those parameters. But more often than not, if you buy a model, even if you get one off the web, they're pretty well calibrated to industry metrics. So what we see when you first take a model, what people are really getting wrong is they're estimating their capability incorrectly, they're estimating the risk incorrectly, and then the estimates are coming in wrong.
So what you're saying, generally speaking, is that it's not a problem so much with the models themselves and the ability to forecast from historical data, but that people are looking at things with a little bit too much rose-colored glasses, and does this bring a dose of reality to a lot of people who are applying these models for the first time?
It definitely does. So when you look at, and it's a bit of a side note, when you look at what is the productivity of individual programmers, it's incredibly low. It's like 6,000 lines of code a year. In the U.S., based on current spend, you will pay about $30 per line of code. And I think if you told most CIOs that, they would be shocked. They would be floored because most people think their developers are more productive. So there is this general bias that people think they can do more than they can.
So let me ask you, should a line of code be less than $30, or is it just the inability of most executives to recognize that the true cost of a line of code is $30?
Probably in my mind, right, because I'm an engineer, that's fine, right, $30 per line of code. Obviously, you know, you can offshore that line of code and lower the actual spend. What I look at more, you know, if we want to intersect management and technology, is you're going to spend $30 per line of code, but, you know, let's make that count. So where are you going to deploy your resources strategically? Understand what should you build, what should you buy? And these play back into the estimation models, right? Like frameworks reduce the size of things you build. So there's a bunch of play there once you start to get some kind of handle on what all the numbers are.
So that kind of leads into my next question. Let's say you've gathered the historical data, you've weighted it properly, your model is calibrated properly, and you get a snapshot of essentially where you are and what you can expect. As your organization and your IT changes, is there a way to recalibrate the model in order to make it continuously accurate?
There definitely is. So we internally, Bearing Point, we have a model. So we do a bunch of calibrations. When you first do your estimate, these are broad sweeping things, right? I have a good idea about size, depending on my expertise in that domain. As I get further and further along in the project, I have a much better handle on the scope of that project. We recommend you continuously estimate throughout there. So you have a checkpoint of, am I progressing according to my estimate? You know, am I way off? So now this reduces surprises in there. We find using a model to be much more accurate than work breakdown or discretionary. So, you know, we use it for auditing. We calibrate it in line based on size. Staffing parameters can change your ability to execute. They can cause rework, things like that. So we know what we know at the beginning. We calibrate the model throughout. We take checkpoints and audits, and that reduces surprises and allows us to manage scope much better.
And are there additional benefits from applying these models accurately outside of just being able to accurately calibrate your labor costs, your labor IT costs?
There definitely is. So what happens is if you have a model, and once you're confident with the parameters and you get good at estimating size, you can start to run scenarios with that model. So you have the solution and you can start to play with parameters. So what if I put a project manager on there who's not as strong? You know, what if I put two senior developers on there instead of junior developers? I can change the staff mix. I can accelerate the schedule. And now I can start to see, what does that mean quantitatively? So if I want to bring this project into 6 months, what does that mean for my staff mix? What does that mean for scope and size? How long do those cycles have to be? How do I track against that? From a managerial standpoint, it's a great decisioning tool. So we adjust risk parameters internally when we look at engagements. So we want to discount something, we change the mix and see what does that impact.
Do you find that with your clients that more and more people are coming to you asking for help in this area as the networks and IT infrastructure for organizations become more and more vital parts of the organization? Do you find that the demand for accuracy in reporting like this is becoming greater and greater?
What we're finding more often than not is that people have a certain staff and a certain staff trajectory. So they have their existing staff, they have their ramp, and then they retrofit work into that. And we all know the statistics. Some enormous number of IT projects are late, over budget. So we find, more often than not, and I'll just cut to the chase here, most people don't even realize it's a problem. So when people look at taking costs out of, they're looking at infrastructure, they're looking at contract renegotiation, they're looking at virtualization. We found very few shops that take a really hard, critical look at labor and how they're managing, estimating, and tracking labor.
So the first step in this process is just to take a look at it.
Absolutely. And we strongly advocate that.
Is part of it because some of the IT infrastructure and some of the people who are writing code, it's somewhat mysterious to even the more sophisticated C-level executives, and that it's easier for them to not take a look at it? Is there fear of taking a look at it and finding out how much you're spending on labor?
You know, I think there's it's bizarre, right? And I don't speculate on the psychology of it. Technology is a very prove-me culture. It's very dismissive, and it's based on creativity and capability. So I say that, And if you're a CIO listening to this podcast, you may go to your CTO and say, is that true? And they're going to say, geez, our guys are 10 times as productive. And that's it. That's the end of the conversation. And I don't know why that is, because the industry metrics are what they are. If your guys are 10 times as productive, what that means is that you still have to get people to backfill that operationally, right? If I got a guy that can write for 10 guys, I need 3 guys to sustain what he does. So there's this wake effect, because eventually you vacillate toward the average. I don't know. I'm shocked that people haven't come and said, whoa, I spent time before Bearing Point as a CTO, and I probably would have dismissed that number. But, you know, we're out there. We see it again and again and again.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience in this podcast about formal estimation methodologies around labor IT costs?
Yeah, so it becomes the cornerstone of a lot of financial arguments within IT. So we have a reuse argument, software reuse argument, but it's based on accurate estimation of labor, right? If you can estimate how much it's going to cost to build it reusable, you can estimate how much it's going to cost to build it, you can start to do discounted cash flows against, should I make it reusable? This becomes the fundamental cornerstone of a build-buy argument, because buying, you're reducing the amount of stuff you're building, but ultimately that's all about labor. So all of these arguments start to fall in. So this is, for us, this is a linchpin of almost all business cases that occur in IT, and the more precise it is, the better those business cases are.
Well, Pete, thanks a lot for taking some time out and speaking with us today.
Thank you.
Pete McAvoy is Senior Manager at Bearing Point.